And we're back with the 900th episode of Kiko. I'm kidding.
Sure feels like it now.
Feels like 700. I'll say it.
How's everybody?
Doing all right?
Good. I had my birthday this weekend and I'm...
Yeah, I know.
I am a plummy-eyed ghoul, so it shows.
Do you feel old?
Kind of. I'm 32 now, which is the age that Karen Carpenter died. So we're all thinking about that constantly.
Well, you know.
So the 33rd will really be the celebration.
Triumphant. Yes, yes, right, yeah.
Okay.
Lewis dragged me to the beach.
I did.
Birthday,
and you were dressed in like a full like parasol and like, I don't, cape? What did you wear? A capelet and a cape?
A jersey?
I don't remember.
All right.
Oh, Lewis, you know what a sports jersey looks like. The you mesh, know, you know, you've seen that.
I don't know if I could draw it. If you made me.
The beach was horrific. I hate the beach, even though I live in LA. I would rather a nice pool in someone's backyard. Also, I tried to ride a bird because our driver dropped us off at lifeguard station 8 because someone, I won't mention their name, put in the wrong thing. And we had to walk to lifeguard station 18. It was like a 25-minute walk. And
why didn't you just call another car?
I don't know. I saw a bird there and I was like, let's ride it. But my driver's license has expired. It expired on my birthday.
Oh my God.
Wait, do you need a driver's license?
Yeah, you have to
scan
it.
Oh, Lord. That's even... Okay, so the idea that these things
the
are
government
like,
is onto you
no,
on a bird.
The idea that these... The argument that I get, because I've still been fighting with people about those goddamn scooters, that they're, like, helpful for maybe... They're, like, homeless people can use it as a mode of transportation or, like, people who don't have other modes of transportation. All this shit that you need to ride one, you gotta have a goddamn active driver's license. If you don't have a car, you may not even have an active driver's license.
And you need a smartphone.
And a smartphone. Get the fuck out of here. Fly away, birds. I hate you. I still hate you. I'm going to throw you all in the dumpster.
Also, I'm now picturing you riding a bird for miles up the beach. And I, shall we say, am living.
What else is happening?
CBS.
This is my favorite network, so please be respectful.
Les Moonves is still in charge.
Woo!
And, my girl.
At the TCAs this weekend, entertainment president Kelly Call basically was like, our culture is fine, and everyone is happy walking the halls at CBS as they have been for the past 40 years, and nothing's happening.
Excuse me, Hawaii Five-O is in its 34th season. It's like Sesame Street for your grandparents.
They also had a weird sort of kerfuffle with... they're doing a remake of Magnum P.I. or one of those, whatever the fuck. And Jay Hernandez is... playing the lead role, and they basically asked him, like, you know, you have a Latinx character, how is that going to affect, like, this new role? And they were like, they literally were like, he just happens to be not white. And you're like, oh, that's not how this works, where it's like you can just treat them like, oh, he's the same guy, but he's tanner, and they kind of botched that.
Yeah, they could have come up with something. I mean, like, literally anything. Like, he'll do a fun handshake with other Latinx characters.
They also didn't. Someone asked if they had a Latinx writer in the room, and the guy was like, no, unfortunately not. And then he later had to tweet, oh, wait, yes, we do. So, you know, I'm available for consulting, for very expensive consulting fees to white people everywhere if you would like to not look crazy in front of the world.
My God, that network. They also have the MacGyver reboot still, right?
Yeah.
What is going on? It's just very shocking.
We're going to talk about some of these messy reboots and that Magnum P.I. one a little bit later when John M. Chu joins us. He is the director of Crazy Rich Asians.
I consider them decadent, thriving Asians, but that's on him.
We'll jump into all of that a little bit later.
Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step 1, download Rocket Money. Step 2, Link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step 3, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step 4, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This past weekend, Donald Trump was racist again. Shocker. I know. This weekend, he went after LeBron James, who on Monday sat down with CNN's Don Lemon to discuss his new I Promise School for at-risk youth in Akron, Ohio.
Oh, so he was asking for it. I understand where Donald Trump was coming from. Yeah.
Days later, Trump discovered this interview exists and started tweeting about it, and he said LeBron was just interviewed by the dumbest man on television, Don Lemon. He made LeBron look smart, which isn't easy to do. I like Mike.
Sorry, not even funny. This is atrocious. He's a horror show. I'm sorry.
Yes. I like to think that he caught Melania watching the episode under her covers with an iPad, and that's how he became aware that this interview took place.
There's like obviously no way to have like a novel take on Donald Trump anymore, but just can we please start framing him as president has nothing to do? I'm sorry, there's tons of interviews over the weekend being like our president sucks, and he randomly picked one, or not so randomly picked one, with two black people and decided because he could throw the low IQ bullshit at them again, he did it.
LeBron James is fucking great in so many different arenas, and the school is amazing.
Including basketball arenas, which we all know about.
Yes, we know a lot about
Thank
them.
You.
And the dribbling, right, Lewis?
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Jerseys.
And the touchdowns.
Right. Please.
Oh,
Kara.
Got you.
I will get my things and leave Kara with being tripped up like this.
But I have to say, the conversation that I most enjoyed that came out of this incident was when everyone was kind of like, yo, you remember when Don Lemon was like, full on in the sunken place. And like, basically everyone was like, when do you think he looked at himself in the mirror and thought, you know what? No more. Because he could not have taken more of a turn from the last like 3 or 4 years.
Right. Old Don Lemon might've been like, well, you know what? I did get a low score on my SAT.
Yeah, right.
perhaps you're right. But now he was like pissed. And
now he grew his hair out a little and he has been... Don has stepped up because, I mean, if you remember, do you remember when he held that sign that said nigger on it?
Yes!
And like, was like, does this offend you? He defended Stop and Frisk. He said once on his show, remember that Malaysian airplane that like disappeared? And by disappeared, it fell into the ocean, guys. My God. He was like, could it have been like a worm, a hole or something fucking crazy where you were like, what are you saying, Don Lemon? He was bananas. And now he's like a fairly measured, still CNN, but CNN journalist.
His rebuttal to the whole thing was this 10-minute, I'll say Rachel Maddow-esque takedown of where Trump was coming from. And it really was fabulous and worth watching.
Well, unlike this president who lashes out wildly at anyone who criticizes him, I have pretty thick skin. And LeBron James, in addition to being a brilliant black man, a superstar in his sport and a hero to his community, is taking the high road, which is exactly where he belongs. So since he spews so many insults so often, the president has called a lot of people stupid. Some of those people are white. But I would just like to note that referring to African Americans as dumb, remember this is America, referring to African Americans as dumb is one of the oldest canards of America's racist past and present, that black people are of inferior intelligence.
Did it end with mysteries about why Paul Manafort was in Oklahoma in 1965, 7 years.
Are you saying Rachel Maddow like goes down to the library and examines microfiche and discovers like he was there in 1947?
Rachel Maddow spends her mornings like she's in the Pelican Brief.
Yeah. Oh. Darby Shaw, I love that book.
The annoying thing about this too is that I remember when everyone was like, oh, is Trump like part of the alt-right? You know, is he a white nationalist president? And it's like, one, yes, the racism literally jumped out when he came down the escalator talking about how Mexicans are rapists. But this thing that he likes to do with like calling black people dumb and specifically mentioning IQ is like straight out of the white nationalist playbook. Like they are obsessed with racism science and this idea that black people are not as smart as white people. And he knows what he's doing when he tweets this. You know, he's dumb, but he's not that dumb.
Also, by the way, I hate bringing up this IQ bullshit again. That's verifiable information that he does not have. He's just literally yelling at you, they have low IQs, when he does not have the papers. I'm sorry, we all know he lies. This is a very specific type of propagandistic lie.
Right. It's like when he talks about how his poll numbers are high. It's like, where did you see this? On the back of a Bazooka Joe comic.
It really speaks to like the deep delusion of racism for Donald Trump to roll out of bed, I assume, onto the floor.
That's right. Like Garfield.
Yes. And to see
Lasagna's still in hand.
To see LeBron James and think, I'm better than him. It's such a level of delusion, truly, where I'm like, it's the only reason racism makes sense to me. Because I'm like, you have to be living so far outside of the actual reality to look at LeBron James and just be like, you know what? I think I figured this out better than he did.
And to acquit himself of being racist by saying, but I do enjoy another basketball player who is black.
Right.
So, I mean, none of this, you can't hold it against me, of course.
I like Mike, aside from being a mediocre Bow Wow movie, was him trying to pit Michael Jordan against LeBron, which ignores the fact that, like, Michael Jordan doesn't like your ass either.
Right. And you know what's also interesting about that? The whole LeBron James, Michael Jordan debate, like, is obviously something that's been going on for a long time. But for him to be aware of it is kind of interesting. That's something I feel like, even in the last
Stephen
month or
Miller
so,
must have done
right,
this.
Right. I'm like, who's telling him about this? Because that is, like, I've seen those conversations on Twitter. They obviously come up a lot. And it's not to say that he's not, like, a basketball fan, but that's really a conversation, like, in the last few years people have been having. And I'm like, because you knew specifically why to throw in that dig, because it's because people try to pit the two of them against each other. And so I really just want to know who told him about that, or like, is he really like, is he on black Twitter? Like, what's happening?
Right. Is he dining with Michael Jordan while Michael Jordan's whispering to him, Republicans buy sneakers too? That rumor that,
oh, that's like
that
30 years old,
that
isn't
dumb
it?
Yeah. Urban legend that's been around forever. And the idea that he also like had a hand in private prisons, like, it's nonsense. And a lot of it is the fact that we as a culture have sort of jumped back into really a lot of our black figures need to be woke. They need to be talking about politics more, like, especially with Trump, is like, you have to be on the ball. And that has people reevaluating how they feel about Michael Jordan from the 90s, which I feel like is unfair, because you can't look at someone through the lens of what was acceptable in the 90s in a 2018 lens.
And also, Michael Jordan is one of the first celebrities to acquire that type of money, I think, too. I don't know what that does to you. I don't know who's in your ear. I don't know what's going on. And it feels weird to even.
Well, he certainly didn't, kill a white woman like OJ.
I mean, Miles Brown wrote a piece for GQ that
was
a really great breakdown and all of that. And he does talk about the fact that, like, Michael Jordan has done a lot of charity work. You know, that statement where he just said, like, I stand with LLJ, which, like, okay, man. Like, it's one of those things where
Brilliant.
If you look back at him, and I can't really fault him for, like, in the 90s and 80s, not, you know, wearing an I can't breathe hoodie, because that was not something that, you know, was happening or was aware of in the way that we're talking about things now. But it is like right now you could have done fucking better than I stand with LJ. I understand how like he has been doing a lot of work for a long time and he does it quietly. And the fact that he is an owner of an NBA team is a very big deal. And it employs black people in positions that they aren't usually in, and leadership roles within that organization. But I still think you could have done better than I stand with LeBron James. Like, there's also, I get so confused when people don't just fucking come for Trump, because you're like, there's no downside to this.
Right.
When you could just call him a fucking bum too, be like, fuck you. And everyone will be like, yes, fuck Donald Trump. Exactly. There's no losing there to have just like had a little bit more of a backbone. But, you know, that's not really his style. But I just want more people to be insulting Donald Trump.
Literally one of my favorite responses to Trump was when Trump came after Steph Curry for, you know, the Warriors not wanting to go to the White House. And LeBron tweeted, you bum.
That's hilarious. Also, by the way, I guess I would have expected something more from Michael Jordan, because Trump's tweet implies you can't like the both of them. You know what I mean? So for him to be like, actually, we're both, you know, legends.
He got the insult. He understood it. And I think that he also knew what he was doing with that particular statement. But, you know, it's good that he said something.
It's also the White House knew what they were doing when Melania's quote-unquote official statement came out that she supports LeBron and would love to visit his school in Ohio. Nobody wants you at that
school. Nobody wants you there.
First of all,
Best Initiative going, by the way?
We don't know which ninth body double is going to walk into that school anyway. So keep your embroidered jackets.
Savannah is going to let that woman stroll into that school? Give me a break. LeBron's going to be like playing defense to keep her ass out of there. They are not...
Melania, stay in that bedroom and feel the wallpaper some more. I just feel like she's touching textured wallpaper all day.
She just wants to leave. She's just like, is this the way out? Should I go to the basketball player's school? Will they let me out if I do that? She's just looking for exit routes, guys. She doesn't give a shit about that school.
I'm talking to Jackie O's ghost. Yes. How'd you do it? When we're back, Beyonce.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Beyonce Giselle Knowles Carter was granted full control of the Vogue September issue this year. She spoke in her own words to writer Clover Hope.
Woo!
Yes.
Shout out to Clover.
Yeah, worked at Jezebel with Kara.
Uh-huh. Clover's also a really, truly excellent journalist, an excellent music journalist.
And she earned that after her review of Lemonade, which was fantastic.
Yeah.
Anyway, she spoke to Clover for Vogue magazine, and she was also photographed by 23-year-old Tyler Mitchell, the first black photographer to shoot a cover for Vogue. So basically, Beyonce just did that.
But also, we said this last week, how fucking crazy is it that we haven't had a black photographer for the Vogue cover? It's just very crazy.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. And also just not remotely surprised. Like, it was sort of surprising, but then you're like, oh, no, of course not. Of course they haven't. Of course they haven't done this. Like, they let six black people on the cover. And, like,
right,
you know, Jennifer Lopez.
And what's funny, too, is Anna Wintour gave an interview because amidst all of this, people have been talking about how she's planning to retire. Mm-hmm. And she always wants to get ahead of these rumors. And, you know, the story is that she wants to retire on her own terms and not have people know about it beforehand. And she was sort of like downplaying it, too. Like, there's always interest, you know, in the September issue. But that article mentions the fact that, like, Rihanna's June Vogue mm-hmm. cover outsold Jennifer Lawrence's September issue, which mm-hmm. was last year. It's like, people talk about the September issue, girl, but they talk about people who are stars.
Right. I know. She's always too plain that, like, bitch, you thought I was going to leave, didn't you? And then she's like, nope, I'm still here. So that to me was like, of the story around this cover, Anna Wintour maybe leaving was like the least interesting part of this. I was like, Beyonce is on the cover, just being Beyonce. And like, you have this black photographer, she's getting full editorial control, which is a little weird. But she looked amazing.
Right. What do we think about the Instagram captions that Beyonce provided us?
It is, I mean, that bitch will not give you another interview. Because the story to Clover was as told to. And so presumably, I'm sure, like, she was interviewing her and asking her questions. But to do a sort of, you know, more traditional feature story where I would maybe interview you and then I go off and I write something and I interview other people and do my opinions and thoughts on you as a person and an artist. Like, I think we will all be in our graves before Beyonce does an interview like that again. It's interesting because, like, after we talked about Goop and, like, the fact that they couldn't keep doing the thing with Vogue because Vogue was like, you have to fact check this. The Beyonce sort of September issue is kind of flies in the face of actual journalism to give this person full editorial control over something they're on the cover of. But, you know, I feel that I should be more worried, but I'm like, I don't know.
I'm so conditioned to want to hear Beyonce in her own words that I sort of just forgot to think about, oh, the Fourth Estate is also disappearing. Who knows?
Exactly.
That said, I mean, like,
do this all the time, though, too. You know, like, Tina Fey and Amy Poehler had control of a magazine once. Like, it started, like, back when, like, Salvador Dali did Vogue Paris in 71. So it's like, we do this for celebrities sometimes. Beyonce, more often than not, because she literally does not let us see behind the wall. I feel like, did you see that video of her online that a friend of hers was shooting?
Oh, Mally, the makeup artist. Yeah,
the makeup artist. She was shooting the video, but Beyonce didn't know it was a video. She thought it was a photo. And it was like,
oh my God, I'm
the
worried.
Most revealing interview we've seen in 20 years.
Yeah, I know. The last time Beyonce was on Vogue was that, like, everyone thought, oh, she's on the cover and we're going to get this story. And you read it and realize that they didn't even talk to her. And they gave her access to, like, her hairstylist and, like, four people. And they're like, that'll do for the interview. So Beyonce is not talking to us for any damn thing.
The shoot itself, by the way, pretty decadent and cute and the same, you know. I always say Beyonce is like if Tina Turner were an X-Men and you got that same amount of decadence and power, so... Hooray.
X-Men Ben Forum. No, she did look good. She has an obsession with flowers lately.
Quite.
She's on her poison ivy, because I remember her birth announcement was her behind that big-ass flower wall. I can't afford these flowers, Beyonce. They'll die in my apartment.
I know. Where are you getting these?
Don't make me want florals.
Do we all have to start wearing floral headdresses now? That's what I'm concerned about.
Namely me. I mean, like, I got to stop that. Yeah.
I did appreciate at least two of the things that she mentioned in it. She talked about her history of descending from a slave owner, and she also talked about how troubling her birth was to the twins.
Yeah.
Which people are not talking about that much, and she literally is like, maybe some of my organs were outside of my body during this procedure. I was like, that is very harrowing, one. Two, I did not know this happened, so I'm actually learning something. And three, why aren't, like, Beyonce's organs, like, trending? It's, you know? Why is it...
I appreciate when she talked about her ancestry, specifically when she called. She said that one of her great, great something, was a slave owner who fell in love with a slave, and she descended from the union of them. And she called that relationship a curse, which, like, I feel like you I don't know if it's often, but, like, if you look at something like 12 Years a Slave, where this it was probably the first time you saw that relationship of, like, the slave owner and a black slave where it seemed like true terrorism, which is what it was, and rape, as opposed to, like, they fell in love. It's like, that doesn't work. You cannot fall – a slave cannot fall in love with someone who owns them. That I believe that that man fell in love with her, but it does not work the reverse. And
right.
I think,
you
like,
think Sally Hemings planned her own
right.
wedding.
You think she – yeah.
down to the bridesmaid dresses, the way
the
they
way
talk
people
about
talk
her
about
Donald
her.
Jefferson.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this was, like, a real relationship, and it wasn't. And so I really appreciated that. I also loved what she said about teaching her son to have a high emotional IQ, because Lord knows men with a low emotional IQs have ruined the world, like truly have fucked everything up with, like, these fucking ridiculous ideas about masculinity and not being vulnerable. It has literally ruined the world. And, like, for her to say that that's something that's really important to her, I'm like, please, God, can everyone just please just try to remember that?
Plus, I feel like growing up with Beyonce as your mom and just being in that whole family, plus also having the history of Jay-Z's fuck up looming over you, is gonna give you some good skills.
Sir. Little baby sir. It's funny, I have to call baby sir.
it's like a Mario Kart character. There's sir and then baby sir. Also, I thought something that was kind of underrated within that article, and there was a Slate piece that touched on this, was just an implication in that in Beyonce's self-pen thing was the pressures on her. Like, she had this, I'll say, traumatic childbirth or whatever, and then was touring milliseconds later. Like, that's a very unusual and rigorous and
well, she
wild
said for
experience.
The, for the first, at, for Blue, she specifically scheduled a tour so that she would have to get back in shape, which is just like... Ugh, like it's so, it's just like speaks to like the snapback with women having to bounce back from pregnancy, which is like a fucking, I mean, it is a natural thing that, you know, whatever, it's happened forever, but it's a traumatic thing to your body that you need time to heal from. And then in particular with the twins, which was so traumatic, she was like, I had to rest for a long time. That was major fucking surgery. It was very serious. And I've even seen people on this latest tour be like, is she pregnant again? Because they thought she looked a little bigger. And I'm like, that's fucking crazy. Now she's told you that she had an insanely traumatic pregnancy, that like she now has some extra weight as a result of that surgery that she had to have. And people who, they didn't know that, fine. But it speaks to just like how you talk about women's bodies, where you're like, oh, is she pregnant? It's like, she made three human beings, Jesus fucking Christ, and she's still willing to dance for you people. That should be enough.
It also puts seeing her Beachella performance into more perspective, you know, because she had this emotional moment at the end, you know, where she was like, thanked the audience, and she was like, I was supposed to perform last year, sorry to keep y'all waiting. And people in the audience were like, girl, you didn't keep us waiting, like, we're here. But, you know, it's like knowing that she had gone through all of that, and now this was her first big performance back, and she gave all of us that. I found it moving.
Be grateful. It is a little, it perhaps could be dicey, but there are so many publications that we need to address before we get to fucking Vogue, you know, a fashion magazine, letting a person who's probably as qualified to do this job as a lot of the people doing it, you know, getting a shot.
So what does this mean for Vogue's future? Do things change? Like, do we see more black women on the covers? Do we see more black photographers? Or is Anna like...
Well, I think we definitely get more like just kind of stunts, period, where, you know, they cede control because like print media has to. Like, I'm surprised Anna Wintour isn't like entering like the slam dunk contest or like shooting herself out of cannons, you know, to get more views.
Celebrity Big Brother confirmed.
Yes.
I do think that for me, the bigger win was having that black photographer. And I do actually think, and I never did not think I would say this, but... print magazines have been doing a decent job getting black women on their covers. Like, there are a bunch of black women who are on September issues this year.
Yeah.
I mean, it is sort of the same. It's a Lupita, it's a Beyonce, it's a Rihanna, it's a Zendaya. But I see that representation is is improving. What I would be now worried about is like, okay, where are like the Latinx women who are on, where, like, it's not just J-Lo and Selena Gomez. I thought I would have seen more covers with Constance Wu with Crazy Rich Asians coming out, and I didn't. And so I feel like, not to be like, okay, the black people are fine, let's move on. But I do think in terms of like that specific type of representation, it seems like that is certainly on the right track. And so the broadening of how we're looking at this seems like a good way to go.
Right. And if there's been, you know, one, the first black photographer for Vogue is like, I don't even want to get
into the other. Sure. Exactly. Exactly. everyone else has not been getting a shot.
I hope this doesn't mean we get fewer Rooney Mara covers, though, because, God, another austere another austere butterfly wing dress. That's what I need.
Why don't you start? You know, you can start a magazine like Oprah where you just put Rooney Mara on every cover.
Your lips to God's ears.
Every month.
Rooney. And every month I'm going to be upset it's not about the band.
That's right. Oh, my God. That's the sickest thing I've ever heard. This is a woman with a harsh bang who doesn't seem like she's here for it ever. That's my brand.
When we're back, John M. Chu, the director of Crazy Rich Asians.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
And we are back with the director of one of the sexiest movies of the summer. We are here with John M. Chu, director of Crazy Rich Asians.
The movie is great.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
The decadence of this movie, you just let it swallow you up. And by decadence, I mostly mean Michelle, who, excuse me, you think I wasn't in the theater when Tomorrow Never Dies came out? There's a Sheryl Crow theme, I meant.
She is amazing. She's the most elegant woman you will ever meet. She has like 8 houses all around the world. She's everything.
I am a big fan of the books. So I've also just like been, I read all 3 of them in like the course of 2 weeks. I know they're so great. Mm-hmm. And I was also watching this movie and I was like, everyone in this movie is so hot. I can't handle this. Everyone is so well dressed. This is exactly what like I needed out of like a summer rom-com, blockbuster. It's so much fun.
Every man has a key shirtless scene, which is beautiful.
A lingering shirtless scene.
Yes.
And I also want it to be a musical.
I think it should be a musical.
The dance sequence was fantastic, and I knew it would be, because you directed one of my favorite dance sequences in a film ever.
Which one is that?
You know which one. The rain dance.
The rain dance and step up to the streets. Yeah, that was my first movie.
Wow.
That movie fucking rules.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Congrats.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Dance has been a part of my life since the very beginning. I took tap when I was a young kid from like 5 years old to 16.
Oh, my God. So did you want to be Savion Glover?
I loved Savion Glover, but I was never good enough. I was never going to be
Is. Savion Glover is the only person other than Gregory Hines who is good at tap dancing. Yes. It's just the two of them.
Yes. I watched a 2-hour set of him in New York, and it was just mind-blowing. No other musicians, literally just him on the floor. It was incredible. So
lots of tap dancing and Crazy Rich. No,
so what does it feel like making, you know, basically a new film. It's based on a book, you know, but it's not a sequel. It's not a revival.
Yes, which I've done a lot of sequels.
Yes.
Almost my whole IMDb is sequels. It's, I decided to do a movie without a number in it.
Brave.
Yes, thank you. It's actually, it's amazingly freeing. Like, when I first got into the business, I had never done a short, I'd done shorts. I'd never done music videos, commercials. I was discovered by Steven Spielberg, saw my short film from USC. So I got dropped into the Hollywood studio world. And so I felt very lucky to be here. And it was always trying to just prove myself that I should be here. It wasn't until a couple years ago I was working on Now You See Me 2, which is this magic magician movie, and working with some of the biggest stars in the world, and realized that what was I doing? What was I contributing to a medium that I love so much, cinema? And how do we bring more voices to the big screen? I realized I was part of the problem because I wasn't moving anything. I was just mixing in with everybody. So I did the scariest thing that I could do, which talk about my own cultural identity, which when you're the only Asian in the room, I know a lot of people share this stuff, no matter what ethnicity you are, the last thing you want to talk about is your own ethnicity. So that was a scary thing to do. I did one short film when I was in college about it, and no one's ever seen it because it's too painful to show.
Do you think this movie will mark a shift for you in terms of doing films that are more explicitly about your identity?
I definitely think as an artist over time, I've grown, you mature, and you find new things that interest you. And the things that scare me are those topics. My film after this is Lin-Manuel Miranda's In the Heights.
Oh, yeah.
Which is an all-Latino.
We're familiar.
Yes. No, wait, who is he?
Yes.
Lin?
He's this guy who writes music and plays, I guess. And
In the Heights, I've seen multiple times because that was back before a Lin show cost $5 million.
Yes. Yes. So we're shooting that in Washington Heights, in his backyard. And that is also the sort of a celebration of the immigrant story and finding your home. And so these things, I actually signed on to both Crazy Rich Asians and In the Heights at the same time.
What?
And Crazy Rich Asians just went first. So there is a shift in my brain to look at things that no one else can do, can bring to the big screen, especially at my age. I just had a daughter. So all these things are sort of coming to a head.
I do feel like that's something that at least I find being a non-white dude where you're asked like in creative work about specifically the voice that you have. And I know it's something that used to bother me a little bit because I'm like, you're not asking these guys to bring that sort of specificity. Like they get to just make Spider-Man and who cares. But I've started to see it a little bit more as like this is something that I have that no, so many other people do not have, and it's richer for that reason.
Yeah, I think I actually never understood the word pride. Like, I get it intellectually. I never fully understood the emotional feeling of pride, probably until this movie. I understood, you know, being proud of my family, being proud of myself, but like when you are surrounded by people that you know a journey that they've gone through and you've heard there and is similar to yours and you know the lonely feeling and here they are and they have gone through the gauntlet and they are confident and like spitting it out there and you're watching this, there is a sense of like, hell yeah, like, I can't explain it. I literally didn't understand until shooting this movie and showing this movie. I see people see it as well, and that changes you no matter what.
Speaking of pride, I was going to say this movie is so splashy, and I feel like I was taking in a trillion details at once, which is a very pleasurable experience. But I was wondering if there was anything subtle that we may have missed that you take particular pride in having directed in the movie.
On the first day of shooting, Kevin Kwan, the writer of the book, called me, and you know, we had all this pressure on us, everyone tweeting different things like, they better do this, they better do that. And he said, John, 7 years ago, I had not written a book, and I was in a dark place. I hated my job. My best friend was going through a mental breakdown. He's like, I was in the darkest place of my life, and so I just decided to write my story. And he's like, I went to my iMac, and I took a post-it note, and I wrote joy. And I put it on my iMac, and every day that I wrote this on...
Wow, putting me exactly in that time. Yes.
I'm describing every moment. He said every page of that book, I looked at that post-it note and said, joy. And this movie, in those 7 years, has given me so much joy, brought so much light to my life. He's like, when you're making this movie, let everything go and just bring joy to the audience. That's the power of the story. So we took that figuratively and literally. And so we put joy post-it notes on our monitors. Mm. We put it in the scene. So if you look, if you watch the movie, it's sort of like hidden Mickey's. You can find these little post-it notes that say joy all over it.
Oh,
so,
I guess that means a second viewing of Crazy Occasions.
I'm just saying.
When we curate the viewings at the bowl, we'll be pointing out each of the post-it notes.
It's better to see on the big screen too, because you can really find those true. Post-it notes.
What I really love is how it harkens back to, you know, like the classic Hollywood big romances that mm-hmm. we used to get, totally. You know, like the 30s and 40s, you mm-hmm. know, but it is a new story. You know, I find it so much better when we get to tell stories that way instead of, you know, if you were redoing a film that we've already seen just with, yeah. you know, an all Asian cast, there's still that baggage of these are the old films and this how it was, you know, totally. And it doesn't really feel like it's your story. Mm-hmm. Do you sort of feel like there are films that you would love to revisit, though? You know, like past Hollywood films, you know, I look at films and I see, oh, some of these things were racist, you know, and you know, as a Asian director, you know, like, are there any things in Hollywood that you feel like maybe I would love to see that corrected, mm-hmm. either by you or someone else?
Yeah, I'm sure there are a ton. I mean, 21, or the based off the book, Bring Down the House.
Oh, yeah, when they made all the those
lead
characters
white. And all those characters. That would be a fun one to do it correctly.
And tell the actual story.
I just met Jeff Ma, who wrote the book. Uh-huh. And it's a fascinating story. And it changes when you have a different perspective, when you are, it is a different story. I think about the old, you talked about how there's a lot of sort of even references to the old Hollywood musicals or mm-hmm. classic sort of stories, How to Marry a Millionaire and all those things.
Oh, fucking but, love that movie. So anyway, yeah.
Really? Do you know this?
But what's fun about this one is that it's through this perspective of someone who's not rich. Even though it's called Crazy Rich Asians, you get the glitz and the glamour of that, but it's literally not about that. It's about Rachel Chu, this Asian American, going to Asia for the first time. And that's the most personal story for me. I remember going to Taiwan when I was 9 or 10 years old and feeling this, when you go visit your sort of homeland for the first time, you don't expect this feeling of warmth. And like you go into a restaurant and they treat you like you're their son, and you go into a store and they treat you like they're your cousin. And you're like, oh, I'm a part of this. And then they call you something like Guaylo, which is like white devil. And then you realize, then you're like, oh, I'm not a part of this. And then you go home and then you feel like you have to choose one or the other. And I've always felt so alone. I thought I was the only Asian American who felt this thing. And as I grew older, I realized I was clearly not, and that there's a whole generation of people who felt this. And so hopefully this movie
bridges that gap.
It comes across
in the movie, you know, okay. that specific piece of culture that, you know, isn't something that, you know, yeah. I've experienced.
And
but.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting, too, because you grew up in Palo Alto,
yeah.
right, which, like, the Bay Area.
Totally. I never had to deal with any of that stuff.
Yeah.
You didn't have to. Everything was cool. It wasn't until, I don't know, even coming to L.A. was the first time. I mean, 2 weeks ago, so it was yelling at the street on me in Beverly Hills, talking about speaking English. And it's like those weird things. You're like, it still happens.
Jesus
it's still
Christ.
And like my sister who went to UCLA, it was the first time she had to deal with it walking in Westwood. This is a while ago, 10 years or maybe more years ago than that. And a woman on the street spit in her face. Like literal spit on
your
her
sister,
face.
Your sister, I assume, is in prison right now for murdering yeah. that woman.
And she was, I think it shook her. And she, yeah. My sister is like super shy, and like that shook her for the rest of her life.
Yeah.
Like you can't ever forget that, a physical thing like that. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, these things, even though we're protected, I'm so glad that I grew up in an environment that I was protected from it, because I know how it can be. Mm-hmm. So that when you see the world, that isn't exactly like that yet, you know that there is light at the end of the tunnel. That there, when I even going to Singapore, and Singapore isn't the most perfect place in the world, but you see all these ethnicities and all these walks of life, all these, and that's why it's also hard when you're making a movie. Everyone thinks like, oh, you're making a movie about Singapore. It's just about the rich, but there's so much mm-hmm. more there, and that's what we also wanted to show. But when you're sitting there and eating food, it's like families, it's lovers, it's best friends, and they're sharing in this food, and it's all cultures, all from all around the world, and it's really, really beautiful.
So when you talk about visiting, you know, yourself and just seeing that difference between how you were raised here, how do you think this is going to play for Asian audiences, you know, here in America and globally?
Mm-hmm. It's hard to tell, to be honest. I think that the story is a universal story. We tried to be as specific as we could so that it could create that universality. Everybody has food as some sort of centerpiece to their life of family. Everyone's in a way, it's more of a generational divide of like these traditions that your parents have come and fought for and brought you to this place that you're living, and then you rebelling against that because you want something else. And then how do you resolve these two things? So I don't know how the rest of the world will feel, but the only thing I can do is tell my truth of this journey. And I think what I have found is that we're all human beings and we're all going through that no matter where you are, where you're from. We all feel lonely. We all feel out of place. We're all trying to find our place in this world, and connection is the most important thing that we're all looking for. And so this movie is about that, and also about your own self-worth, which is what I think it's all about, is you are worth, your self-worth determines who you think you deserve to be loved by. It determines what you what job you think you deserve, what job, what your ambition is, all those things. And for Rachel Chu, her journey of discovering that she is worth it, and that it's not, she doesn't have to work harder to prove everybody. Of course, we have to work hard to do our own thing, but like that she's good enough is sort of the point of it all.
There's a wonderful Hollywood Reporter cover story on the film, and something I thought was so interesting, and it's been really reported about, like, there was an option to bring the film to Netflix, and instead you decided on a traditional theatrical release. And I think about in the last few years when you've had, like, you've had Get Outs and Black Panthers and things like that and Hidden Figures. And it feels like for the first time, I feel like for Black writers and filmmakers, the pressure of this has to be the movie feels a little bit lower. I mean, I think still, like, you know, it's sort of twice as good. It does have to be better, but it feels like that's easing up a little bit. But this is like, this is kind of like the, you talked about the pressure for this film and just how you've been sitting in that, especially with like the excitement around it.
It's really unfair to say one movie has to represent all Asian people from all around the world with all the issues, because there's so many things, and
it's all up to you,
and it's all up to me in this little movie.
Where's the movie for the demure retiring Asians? How about that?
And trust me, I get those tweets, I get that, and I don't know how to answer other than like, did you guys read the book?
Because right.
There's specific characters that I'm trying to interpret. So we decided to do a movie because, one, I'm a movie guy. I love the big screen. I still believe in the romance of the cinema, that it's not just on while you're cooking dinner. It's not just on while you're looking on your phone. It's a place where you go and you fight through traffic and you gather your friends and your family. You make plans and you pay money and you go in and you buy food and you sit in a room and you turn off the lights and then you breathe and you say, tell me a story. I'm going to give you my 2 hours. And I think there is still something to be said when giant corporations who now own all the studios signal to the world that this couple, this romantic Asian leads, this all Asian cast is worth your time and your energy. It was a sign that has not been sort of put out there, and it trickles to all media. Netflix is, I love Netflix. It's been amazing. And, you know, they're doing some of the most cutting edge stuff and so much representation that they're already the future. What I think is what's in the past is the movie business. And so I knew, as our responsibility as a movie lover and a movie maker, that I could push this through if I focused in on this. I'd been jumping on all these sequels and franchise stuff, like I said, and it's been really fun. I've learned, it's been my grad school. But to then say, I've earned the right to get one through, and the one I'm going to get through right now is this story that I've not seen on the big screen, was important to me. And I do believe that Kevin, myself, Nina Jacobs, and Brad Sims, all our producers, were all in a position in our careers where we weren't desperate for the money. We weren't desperate for this thing. We had to tell this story in the right medium. And without that, you know, we tripled down emotionally on it. Okay, we were going to be giving this thing up. Now we have to make this great. And there was no guarantee from Warner Brothers they were going to market it or how many theaters there. So we had to make it so great that it would compel them to release it at this size. And I think that was better for the movie.
That's like that Chris Brown or Chris Rock, God, not Chris Brown, where he talks about like you have to, he was referencing some like Muhammad Ali fight, I think. And it was like, you have to, it has to be a knockout. Because if you were to rely on like the judges, it was like this black fighter would have lost. And it's so, that pressure of like, this has to be a knockout, it can be a lot, but I think it also like your shit is just better.
I feel like I had to I've trained my whole career, my whole life for this moment. So
well, it's great. Everyone should go see it.
Truly, the glamour level is like if Sex and the City 2 did not make you feel icky at all and replenished your electrolytes. That's what's going on.
Crazy Rich Asians is in theaters next week.
Yeah,
so go see it,
please do.
When we're back, keep it. And we're back for our favorite segment of the week. It's Keep It.
It is.
Kara.
Yes.
What are you keeping?
This week, I am keeping think pieces about the HBO series Succession. The show on HBO is really good if you haven't seen it. It's sort of like a fictional version of the Murdochs. I like it because it's a bunch of horrible, awful, rich white people.
And you kind of want them to fail.
I want them to die.
Yeah.
I want them all to die. And their lives are like, you know, there's drama in the show. And so anytime something goes bad for them, I love it because I have no emotional stake in their happiness whatsoever.
Especially since the main guy is very like Pete Campbell on Mad Men or Donald Trump Jr.
He's my favorite one, though, if I had to pick one. But I have seen all of these think pieces about the show. And I have written think pieces. I get it. It's television. But I just feel like people are taking it so seriously because they saw like a bunch of rich white dudes and an HBO prestige show. And they're like, it's deserving of these long ass, very serious think pieces. And like, it is great. But like, it's like a fun, like there are parts of the show that are funny and like an almost goofy level. And so I feel like people are treating it.
They're doing
like
the most.
They're doing the most. Like it's so much, like it's really good and the characters are really interesting, but you know, I don't know that it's worthy of like these crazy, deep, intricate dives into like what this means about this, that, or the other. Like it's just a really fucking entertaining television show. Let it be that. Love HBO, but just because it's on HBO doesn't mean that it's now like the most layered fucking thing you've ever seen
on TV. Where are my ballers think pieces?
I'm saying
that's just it. The word Succession feels like it requires a certain amount of gravitas.
It really was like designed for these exact type of kind of like white internet dudes to be like, this is important, I need to write about it. And they, I mean, brilliant move because HBO like nailed it. But just stop, please.
Also, the girl on that show, Sarah Snook, do you know she's Australian? How wild
is that? I kind of get
that.
She talks a little. She could see that she maybe has like a little bit of an accent, but she's great. And I really do like the show. I don't like all of you who are writing these things.
My favorite thing about the show, I haven't seen it, but is Succession Twitter versus Billions Twitter.
Oh,
which show should you be watching?
And I like both shows. So just watch. I mean, my God, just watch both of them and shut up about it. How about that, guys?
That's your version of Goofus and Gallant. Billions Twitter versus Succession Twitter.
Goofus, highlights for children. Girl.
Highlights for you.
What is your keep it?
Okay. I actually apologize for the lack of quality I'm bringing to my keep it this week. Recently, I just was at a lovely restaurant.
At least you've apologized for once.
Here we go. They served water that you have to get from like the carafe itself, and it had cucumber flakes in it. Excuse me. No, one. Do you ever drink water and think this would be so much better if it were less hydrating? No,
it's less hydrating.
I think
with
a
cucumber.
It is. Excuse me. I'm now eating a food instead of drinking
that's
a water.
Mostly water. A cucumber is like 90% water.
I don't need obstacles on the way to the water. I don't need to jump over some tires before I get to the water.
It's global guts.
I can't get on board
with hydration.
This one.
I'm just saying. Here I am with a sandwich. That's food for me. I don't need more secret lettuce in the drink
well,
I'm
so
consuming.
Question for you, Lewis. If you had gone to the same carafe and instead they had put some berries in it, perhaps to infuse the water. Would you be unhappy with that if they put a lemon and there's a little bit of the pulp
Well, now we're talking about berries, which I believe I could separate myself. Whereas the flakes in the cucumber simply want to join the water. I don't know if you've ever seen how water works. It will flow inside you with flakes in it.
Got it.
Yes,
got it.
And I can't get it out.
I think berries could do that because some of the little bits will come off and it would do a similar thing to the cucumber.
There's a reason Captain Crunch doesn't have Captain Crunch cucumber. He has berries.
That's right. Yes. Well, also, does berries taste better than cucumber to me?
You don't like infused water.
No, I'm somebody with all the shit separated on my plate. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I also just don't
flakes
like these carafes
included.
In general.
Yeah.
We used to have like one at MTV, and I was just always suspicious about like the sanitation. And then I learned that some people were refilling them with like their water bottles, and then people started getting sick in the office. So
why
like,
would you refill it with your water bottle?
Because people are gross.
What is this, Contagion? Am I Gwyneth?
People got sick for like a week, and it was because of the water. I was like, luckily, I never drank any of it because I didn't trust it.
Oh my God. Don't trust cucumbers, just period. I turn most of them into pickles. I just don't want to see it. Just don't want to see it.
Oh my goodness.
Right. Brine it.
Okay.
My keep it this week is for everybody who is writing that First Amendment dick, talking about removing Alex Jones from Spotify, YouTube, whatever. Facebook is infringing on people's First Amendment rights. These are privately owned companies that can decide who they want to have on their platform, and it is not encroaching on your First Amendment rights. And the person I'm most mad about is the other day, Ted Cruz, that serial killer, was talking about how, you know, I remember that poem, First They Came for Alex Jones.
Bitch, no,
I'm like,
no.
You know what, bitch?
Oh, God.
Let's not use this poem in reference to Alex Jones. And two, aren't you trying to win an election, bitch? Like, Beto is out here literally snatching all of your votes. People can't stand your crazy ass. And you're busy like running around trying to make Trump feel better while he calls your wife ugly. And now you're out here defending Alex Jones. Get your life together, Ted Cruz.
He is a sentient pile of pus. I mean, there's nothing else to him. Someone drew a face on some pus. I'm sorry. I'm sorry we had to talk about
when him. Meghan McCain is making fun of you on The View, like, it's a wrap. She can't make fun of anybody.
When Meghan McCain stars in your roast, something's the matter.
Right? Oh, like, she can't even give the dozen. She gives you six, and she is dunking on Ted Cruz.
You know, it goes back to, too, nobody knows anything or reads anything, and they clearly haven't read the fucking Constitution. Nobody knows anything.
I'm going to pop in your window like we're in fucking Mayberry and start talking to you. You can't close the window on me because free speech.
Right. Don't you people think that because you have laws against hate speech, oh, you can't just say whatever the fuck, or you can and you can get fired for it, but the government can't throw you in prison for it. That's what it means.
I'm not picturing Alex Jones in like his Grand Wizard outfit, just like walking door to door, hoping to be accepted.
Free speech, unless you're saying white people are awful, and then they get real mad.
They get real mad. They tattle to the New York Times on you.
Anyway, Ted Cruz.
Don't ever stop making white people jokes, guys.
And also, Ted Cruz, worry about your fucking election, which you're going to lose, but at least pretend like you're trying to win. That's our show this week. We'll talk to you next week.